From The Times and The Sunday Times, this is The Story. I'm Manveen Rana. We'd been warned it was coming, but on Saturday night, when Iran began its attack on Israel, what was shocking was the sheer scale.
The sound of sirens pierced the night sky as a wave of Iranian weapons were intercepted over Israel.
Tonight, Iran launched a large-scale of coordinated attack on Israel. The regime in Iran fired a massive swarm over 200 killer drones, cruise missiles, and ballistic missiles towards the state of Israel. Tonight, wide-scale attack by Iran is a major escalation.
Iran's attack came in response to Israel bombing its consulate in Damascus, which killed several of its top military commanders. By Sunday morning, Iran announced its attack was over and the matter could be deemed concluded. But is it?
The Middle East is on the brink. The people of the region are confronting a real danger of a devastating full-scale conflict. Now is the time to defuse and de-escalate. Now is the time for maximum restraint.
We are working urgently with our allies to de-escalate the situation and prevent further bloodshed. We want to see calmer heads prevail, and we are directing all our diplomatic efforts to that end.
As its allies urge caution, what will Israel do next? We hear from our correspondent on the ground the morning after the attack, and as the Foreign Secretary, David Cameron, heads to Israel, our man in the Middle East explains how all of this could play out across the region and the world. The story today: are Israel and Iran on the brink of war?
My name's Gabrielle Weiniger. I've been covering the war in Gaza since October the 7th for The Times, and I've been in this region in the Middle East for over a decade, covering stories across the region.
It's Sunday morning. I really should start by asking, how are you?
I'm a little bit tired. It was a very eventful night last night. We had to wait quite a long time to see what was going to happen from when missiles were launched from Iran. We heard we had up to 9 hours to wait to see if they would land. So that definitely created a lot of tension among the Israeli public, and I have to admit also personally.
There's been talk for days about a potential attack. When did you realise it was actually on its way?
Around 9 p.m. local time, Daniel Hagari, who's become a bit of the face of the war in some ways for the public. He gives nightly addresses to the Israeli public from different Israeli television stations, just updating on the status of the war in Gaza and on any changes to the Home Front Command. He came on around 9 p.m. onto national television and said, the guidelines have changed.
You must go into the sheltered area and remain there for 10 minutes at least, no less than that. We will update you if it is necessary to stay there longer. Please stick only to the official instructions of the IDF spokesperson's unit and the Home Front Command. It's always very important to follow the instructions of the Home Front Command. These save lives.
2 weeks since that Israeli attack on Iranian consul in Syria, the instructions hadn't changed for civilians. Residents had been behaving as normal. It dawned on everybody that the attack was pretty imminent. At that time, I thought, now's a good time to walk the dog before anything happens. I went downstairs and the streets were completely empty. I overheard a few conversations, including one of a rather worried father to his daughter, begging her to leave Tel Aviv and come with him to a quieter moshav or settlement, a little farm somewhere in Israel, so that she wouldn't be in quite so close proximity to the military headquarters, which is in the center of Tel Aviv. It's known as the Kiryat, and according to international law, a military target. So any attack on that base would potentially endanger the rest of Tel Aviv. Around an hour and a half later, so around 10:45, we started to hear the initial reports from Iran that missiles had been launched. I got a call from the editor, and I confirmed it to him that it was also from our Israeli sources. We were hearing that UAVs and drones had been launched, and they would take up to 9 hours to get to Israel. There was a lot of news coming in at once. So there were a lot of also rumors and misreportings. I know that ABC News, for example, reported that there was up to 500 missiles being sent.
What do we know about these missiles and drones that Iran is sending to Israel now?
With the U.S. official I have been speaking to this evening said they expect 400 to 500 drones and missiles to be heading towards Israel. That is clearly happening right now.
The next thing we heard was that Hezbollah, who are the Lebanese Shia militia, who have been fighting in a war against Israel since the eruption of the war in Gaza on October the 7th, they joined in solidarity with Hamas. Both Hamas and Hezbollah are proxies of Iran. They sent a volley that landed in Israel's north in the occupied Golan Heights, which was formerly belonging to Syria.
This is a volley of rockets.
Yeah, but the volley of rockets from Hezbollah isn't something unusual. That's been going on since October, and Israel knows how to cope with those rockets. They were intercepted and no damage was caused. That's a very standard occurrence over the last 6 months, so Israelis don't get particularly excited about that. The next thing we heard was an instruction for Israeli residents of certain cities to stay very close to a safe space. And between 1:30 and 2 a.m. was the first volley of rockets from Iran that came into Israeli airspace over the north, the south, parts of the West Bank. They were all intercepted.
Explosions lit up Israel's night sky as interceptors took down dozens upon dozens of Iranian-launched drones.
Together with our allies and partners across the region, we are operating at this very moment to defend Israel from Iran's attack. So far, we have intercepted the vast majority of incoming missiles by Israeli systems.
I think the first things to land were actually the cruise missiles, which take up to 3 hours to land. So there were three different types of missiles that were sent over. There were surface-to-surface ballistic missiles, drones, and cruise missiles. And each one of those has its own speed and the amount of distance it can travel in a certain speed. But over 300 of those missiles were sent in total. And the Israeli army is saying 99% of them were intercepted and most of them didn't reach the Israeli skies. So they were intercepted even before they reached Israel by either the UK, the US, Israel, or indeed rumours of Jordanian and Saudi cooperation in that defence coalition as well.
And Gabriel, for you, in the meantime, these drones and missiles are taking hours from being launched in Iran to arrive anywhere near Israel. What's happening on the ground? What are people doing? What are they thinking? How do you prepare for the imminent arrival of missiles?
Well, maybe I'm lucky in a way personally because I have to just stay attached to the news so I know what's happening. And I was just quite distracted keeping on top of reports alongside Louise Callahan, who did a fantastic job of saying what was happening in the States. So we were coordinating on that a lot. I can speak for Tel Aviv because that's what I saw. Everybody's lights stayed on. So the whole neighbourhood was lit up until to at least 2 or 3 in the morning. People weren't going to sleep. I did go down to the public shelter to see what was happening around 2 a.m. local, which was around the time the first volley was set to land. There was very few people in there. There was an elderly lady who had been trying to wake up her husband, but he didn't want to go down. She was reading a book quite calmly in a very brightly lit shelter with benches around it. And not much else. It was quite uncomfortable. And there was one family with 2 young children who had also gone into the shelter. I think it's worth mentioning that a lot of Israelis have safe rooms, especially in the new buildings in cities around Israel. So it's reinforced blast-proof rooms inside a building. And other older buildings have their own shelter downstairs in the basement floor. My building personally doesn't have either of those. And the home front command instructions are to stay inside a stairwell, a central stairwell. But that won't always work because there's not always a central stairwell. I think what was so different this time, Israelis are used to having between 30 seconds and a minute and a half to get to a safe space, whether that's a stairwell, a shelter or a safe room, when missiles come in from usually the Gaza Strip. This time, the warning came in just hours ahead of time. And when you anticipate something, it just naturally raises the anxiety level among the Israeli public. And I think that's what everybody was feeling.
How worried were you?
How worried was I? I'll put it like this. I was relieved on a personal level that it didn't reach Tel Aviv. I knew from the start that this would be a targeted and precise operation against military targets. Even if Israel intercepted the rockets, which they usually do, Israel touts some 90% success rate in terms of intercepting rockets. Even though they're not used to such sophisticated rockets, the Iranian rockets were much faster, much more powerful, much bigger warheads. There was still a concern that even if they intercept something over Tel Aviv, there can be very heavy shrapnel damage.
Yeah.
It's not something that Israel is used to, these missiles. For me, on a personal level, I have an air of caution. Okay, I rationally know that this is not going to hurt me. At the same time, I'm a journalist. It's my job not to take risks, but also to report what's going on. I think people in Jerusalem had it worse than they had in Tel Aviv because they had sirens and very loud booms. Also in areas in the West Bank. And of course, over the Israeli Negev desert, where there was a young girl who was critically injured, a young girl from a Bedouin village, and the Bedouin villages typically don't have safe spaces.
At one point, Netanyahu made a statement saying this is the attack.
Israeli citizens, in recent years and even more so in recent weeks, Israel has been preparing for the possibility of a direct attack from Iran. Our defense systems are deployed. We are prepared for any scenario, both in defense and attack. The state of Israel is strong. The Israeli army is strong. The public is strong.
What was the reaction in Israel?
I think that there's a lot of anger towards Benjamin Netanyahu because in the Israeli media, it was reported that over the weekend, he spent the weekend in a nuclear bunker that belonged to an American billionaire, Simon Falik. This raised a lot of upset in the press and in the public and the idea that the prime minister wouldn't go down with the ship, so to speak.
I understand there are actually protests outside this house. That's people taking huge risks, not hiding at all, going out on the street to protest around this house. There was so much anger.
That's exactly it. It just shows how much animosity there is towards him. For Netanyahu, he built his career on Iran as enemy number one. And I think a lot of Israelis feel that this is exactly what he wanted. He's been waiting for this moment. There's a feeling, and I've heard people talking about it this morning, that there's what Israel should do and then what Benjamin Netanyahu wants to do. And the idea that he wants to extend the war, not only the war in Gaza, but to widen the conflict and drag America into a wider conflict as well.
The attack finally finishes, and it finishes with a statement from the Iranians saying, the attack is over, we consider the matter closed. How did that feel, and what was the reaction to that in Israel?
It's difficult to say that was when it was really over, because they announced that while the missiles were still flying through the air. So despite that announcement from Iran, it very much wasn't over for Israel. Missiles were still en route and needed to be intercepted.
Was there a sense of relief, though, that this might be just a discreet attack, that once last night was over, that's a line in the sand?
I don't think Israelis buy that. I think that this was such an unprecedented attack and in such uncharted territory to have Iran directly attack and strike Israel. And there was a direct hit, not only on that young girl, but also on an airbase in southern Israel, which did very minor damage. But it shows the capability that Iran has to strike Israel precisely and overwhelm their air defenses as well. I think there is an understanding among Israelis that this isn't over. Israel's going to be weighing their options as to how to respond. And while it was a limited strike and had also limited damage, this seems to have changed the rules somewhat.
After the attacks stopped, we heard that the Americans were cautioning everyone to try and de-escalate now. Tell me about the discussions that are taking place in Israel about what should happen next.
I think Israel knows that they've come out of this looking quite strong. Israel's demonstrated its ability to fend off a multi-fronted attack because Hezbollah, as we mentioned, attacked from the north, and also the Iran-backed Houthi rebels in Yemen also sent missiles from there. It depends where Israel wants to take this. And actually, it might not even be up to Israel. It might be where Netanyahu wants to take this. So it might not be a military decision. It might be a political one. He may take the opportunity to bring America back in again after this fallout in the Gaza war and unhappiness that the Biden administration has shown with Israel's conduct of the war, which has just left Gazan civilians absolutely desperate. The fact is, Israel looked very weak after the 7th of October and their military and intelligence failures that allowed an attack from Hamas to kill 1,200 people. And then the Gaza war lasting 6 months with very little in terms of success of rescuing the hostages or killing the leadership of Hamas. Iran has also come out of this looking strong. Iran has followed up on their promise to retaliate for the killing of two senior IRGC guards. And Israel will probably want to send some kind of message after this unprecedented escalation.
From what you're hearing so far from people, from social media, just talk us through where Israelis are on this, because obviously there is no one generic response, but what are you hearing from people? How do they feel about the prospect of a bigger war?
They just don't know what to expect, what's going to happen next. This is somewhere that we have never been before in history. So it's really difficult to predict. I mean, just to give you a taste of something on the ground, a lot of people showed up to the airport today despite not having a flight. A lot of people wanted to get out of the country.
Really?
Yeah. For the ordinary Israelis, this is a very scary moment in time for them. And although Iran's strike was clearly in some way choreographed or orchestrated and not targeting civilian areas, it still happened. It's still a very different reality today to what it was yesterday in terms of facing what has been an invisible enemy and what has been a decade-long shadow war has come into the light. And I think that's going to take a few days for people to realise that things have changed. In Tel Aviv, I can't hear a single car. It's very quiet. Okay, people are sleeping because they're very tired having a sleepless night and a lot of tension and adrenaline. And there are cafes open. People are staying home. People want to stay with their families and stay safe. And they're not going to the beach. It's a very lovely sunny day. There aren't boats on the sea. There's a bit of a collective shock. Things happened last night that have never happened before. The Iran attack, the closure of Israeli airspace for 7 hours and also Jordanian airspace, flights being cancelled. It was very apocalyptic.
Coming up, could this be the trigger for a much bigger war? And if so, what role would the West play? That's in just a moment. This weekend, if you're a Time subscriber and if you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts, then don't forget to look out for the latest episode of Inside the Newsroom. It's our new behind-the-scenes series showing you how the paper comes together. Visit thetimes.co.uk/bonuspodcasts to find out more.
Thank you. I'm Samer Lothrosh. I am the Middle East correspondent for The Times.
Samer, take us back to Saturday night. Just explain, what do you think the Iranians were trying to achieve?
I think the Iranians had come under considerable pressure to respond to the Israeli strike on their consulate, which killed their top commander in Syria. So they telegraphed their response for days, really. It was no surprise. They gave ample warning, I think, to the U.S. indirectly and directly to countries in the region, including Jordan and Turkey and others, whose airspace would be impacted by any attack. So all in all, it was as though it were calculated to cause minimal damage, but send a message both externally and domestically. Externally, they wanted to show Israel that the rules of their confrontation had changed and they could strike again, this time with less notice and presumably more damage. And domestically, they'd really been coming under pressure from hardliners on the one hand. And on the other hand, they also don't want to show any weakness to their much larger and more considerable opposition in the country. That's why they embellished the effects of their strike domestically. Iranian state TV at one point aired footage of Chilean wildfires and claimed that, you know, that was a result of their attack on Israel.
So if you sat in Iran, you would think the attacks on Saturday night were much more significant than they were. It's very interesting what you say about this was a carefully calibrated response. It wasn't supposed to cause damage, more a show of force. Did we learn something on Saturday night from the people who came out to help Israel in their response?
Absolutely. I mean, several countries have raised their hands and said that we were involved. So you have the UK, obviously the US was a major one, France, Jordan announced that it also shot down missiles that entered its airspace. I think in the Jordanian case, it's also a matter of sovereignty. You can't just fly drones over Jordanian airspace and think you can get away with it. What it has done is, in a way, increase regional cooperation. That's something the U.S. had been pushing before the war, the idea of a regional pact for air defenses aimed at Iran, which would have involved countries that had made peace treaties with Israel, including Jordan, the United Arab Emirates, but also countries that were looking into it, like Saudi Arabia. And what we saw in effect was something along those lines, where there was intelligence sharing, there was coordination, there was joint action. And that's something that Israel would have dreamed about a year ago. And there are people in Israel now saying, let's take this win. We have a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for regional cooperation. There's a new reality there that some people might be keen on preserving.
That really was a success. But even the US and the UK turning up and playing such a big part in helping Israel on the night is quite a significant change from where we were even a week ago, where people were talking about, should we even be allowing weapons to be sold to Israel? There's a real sort of sea change in the mood. Does that mean, you know, having been shown how important allies are over the weekend, do you think Israel would be more likely to listen to them?
The Israeli cabinet is divided on how and when to respond. I think there's an acceptance that Israel might very well retaliate at some point. Now, the matter of how it does it and when it does it is something that's still being debated. I don't think they'll necessarily take into account what the U.S. wants. They certainly haven't been doing that over the past few months when it comes to the war in Gaza. I think the fear here is that if Israel goes overboard in its retaliation, the Iranians aren't going to be as nice about it next time, relatively, in the sense that they're not going to be giving all this advance notice. They're not going to be calling up all their neighbors saying, here's when we're going to do the attack. And that's causing concern in the region as well. So I think everyone would like everyone to stand down at this point, both the Iranians and the Israelis, and for everyone just to take their wins. Everyone's kind of come out looking good from this affair. The Iranians had their show of force and they had their face-saving measures. The Israelis showed that they're very capable of defending their country. And also they got a lot of sympathy, and countries that until last week had been criticizing them and considering putting out at least the idea of conditioning arms sales to Israel. They're not talking about that right now.
Give us a sense of what America will be saying to Israel at the moment.
I think the U.S. is telling Israel that you've notched a success here, run with it, take it, quit while you're ahead. I think that's our main message.
And it's really interesting. As you say, it's really rare in a situation like this, in a diplomatic spat, let alone a war, to have a situation where everybody can walk away notching up a win. As somebody who watches the region carefully, do you think Iran wants an escalation? Do you think they want a war?
No, Iran certainly doesn't want an escalation. As far as we know, they didn't know about the plan to attack Israel on October 7th. They had assisted Hamas in building up its capabilities. They armed them, they trained them, they financed them. But Hamas is relatively independent. And I think there was some Iranian frustration on the lack of notice, because once that attack took place, any sane person would have realized that Israel's reaction would not be similar to previous wars. Israel went to war several times in Gaza, once for almost a month and a half, more than a month and a half, and that was over rockets being fired at Israel, with casualties that nowhere approach the casualties of October 7. So the Iranians scrambled, I think, to react, as did Hezbollah in Lebanon and the Houthis and other allies in the region, who have been coordinating more closely over the past few years. I think the Iranian strategy at the time was, we can activate our proxies, we can assist them to a degree, but again, each of their proxies have their own calculations. So I think Iran was happy to keep up the pressure, but not to enter a full-scale confrontation with Israel. But several things changed with the Israeli airstrike on the consulate. It wasn't the first time Israel had assassinated senior Iranian Revolutionary Guard members in Syria, but doing it in what's meant to be a diplomatic mission, it's obviously being used by the Iranians for military purposes, it did signal to the Iranians that nowhere is safe for you in Syria. And that's something that the Iranians can't really abide, because for them, Syria is very important. It is their strategic depth, and it's something that they fought long and hard to build up. They went in there to defend Bashar al-Assad's regime, and it looked like Syria might be lost to the rebels. They've won, and they've gained a huge strategic advantage from it. So I think that's when they decided, that's our red line, and we have to respond. I think with the Iranians, in their best case scenario, is that they would have responded. They wouldn't have done it in a way that would force Israel to lash out. They think that they did that. They won at home amongst their constituents. They hope to leave it at that. Obviously, for the Israelis, it's not that easy.
Samer, all eyes now are on Israel. You know, the ball is very much in their court. Depending on how they respond, there is a possibility of an Iranian response to their response. How might this escalate? You know, what are the best and worst case scenarios here?
The best case scenario would be, I think, is if Israel heeds the U.S. advice, or if their retaliation is something that the Iranians won't necessarily feel obliged to respond to. It might be something along the lines of, at some point, airstrikes against Iranian drone and missile capabilities, or they could go after more high-value targets in Syria that belong to Iran. If the attack, though, hurts too much, I think the Iranians will try to respond again, this time without the notice, and this time it could inflict more damage. And that would just set off a cycle that I think nobody particularly wants to see. But at the same time, the Gaza war is ongoing. Ceasefire talks haven't really progressed. Hamas feels very empowered and emboldened, perversely enough, although much of Gaza is destroyed. All the elements are there for another and major regional escalation. And in the medium and long term, there is a danger that, you know, given that the nuclear agreement with Iran is in tatters, and there isn't really any oversight now of the Iranian nuclear program, they are very close to a nuclear bomb. And one thing that they might be factoring in at this point is, if they go to war with Israel, yes, a Saturday's attack was performative, but even if they were to give it their best shot, they really can't compete with Israel in a conventional sense. So that leaves them with becoming a nuclear power and having a nuclear deterrent. That would obviously change everything. And because the idea of letting go of that in return for sanctions relief isn't on the table at the moment, we could see the Iranians think more seriously about speeding up their program.
That really is alarming. If this does lead to an escalation, if it does lead to a regional conflict, how much will America and Britain want to be involved, given that they are warning both sides not to keep pushing to try and de-escalate? Will they always be there to protect Israel as they were on Saturday?
They would very much hope that it doesn't happen, but if there were a war, they would be dragged along right behind Israel, I think. But there's not much choice there.
And Sameh, if this can be contained, which is obviously what everybody is currently hoping for, if it doesn't lead to a regional war, has Saturday still changed quite fundamentally the equation in the Middle East?
I think we're at a point right now where it's incredibly hard to predict what happens. Conventional wisdom for months really has been that there will be no regional war, there will be no escalation because it's not in the self-interest of this party or that party. But those assumptions, I think, have just been blown up over the past few months.
That was Sameh Alatrush, The Times' Middle East correspondent, and Gabriel Weiniger, our correspondent on the ground in Israel. As the situation develops, The Times will have full coverage. You can find the latest at thetimes.co.uk. The producer today was Chris Wade. The executive producer was Edward Drummond, and sound design was by Mao Lasseto. If you can, please do leave us a review. It'll help others to find us. Thanks for listening. See you tomorrow.